great plays. The National Broadcasting Company presents The School for Scandal by Richard Brinsley Sheridan, another great play in the development of the history of drama. It was in Wren's Drury Lane Theatre, 161 years ago in London, England, that the premiere performance of Sheridan's The School for Scandal was presented before a brilliant audience. Throughout the years, the greatest men and women in the history of the stage wove their magic spells within those walls. John Phillips Kemble, Thomas Betterton, Peg Woffington, David Garrick, and Sarah Siddons were among the immortals who glorified that stage. After the retirement of David Garrick in the year 1776, Sheridan, the author of this afternoon's play, took over the duties of managing the Drury Lane with his father-in-law, Thomas Lenty, the composer, and Dr. Ford. From the outset, Sheridan's first season was remarkable, due in large part to the production of his School for Scandal. Once again, we invite you to be our guest at a great play, The School for Scandal, which was first presented on Saturday afternoon, May 8th, 1777, at the Drury Lane Theatre, London, England. Sheridan begins his comedy at Lady Sneerwell's house, where she and her contemporaries indulge in the gentle art of gossiping. Their chief topic is scandal about their neighbors. The not-too-harmonious marriage of Sir Peter and Lady Teazle comes under their observation, and also the mode of life and the loves of the brothers Charles and Joseph Surface. It so happens that Joseph Surface is allied by mutual self-interest to Lady Sneerwell, but his real interest is Mariah, ward of Sir Peter, whose money rather than her person appeals to him. To further his schemes, he flatters and plays the gallant to Lady Teazle. Charles Surface, on the other hand, is ardently attached to Mariah and seeks nothing but her hand in marriage. The first scene in this afternoon's production of The School for Scandal is a room in Sir Peter Teazle's house. Sir Peter, a newlywed, bemoans his state of matrimony.
When an old bachelor marries a young wife, what is he to expect? Well, 'tis now 6 months since Lady Teazle made me the happiest of men, and I've been the most miserable dog ever since. We tiffed a little going to church and fairly quarreled before the bells had done ringing. And I was more than once nearly choked with gall during the honeymoon, and had lost all comfort in life before my friends had done wishing me joy. And yet I chose with caution a girl bred wholly in the country who never knew luxury beyond one silk gown or dissipation above the annual gala or a race ball. Yet she now plays all her part in all the extravagant fopperies of fashion in the town with as ready a grace as if she never had seen a bush or a green plot outside of Grosvenor Square. She dissipates my fortune and contradicts all my humors. Yet the worst of it is, I love her, or I should never bear all this. However, I'll never be weak enough to own it.
Oh, Sir Peter, your servant. How is it with you, sir?
Oh, very bad, Master Rowley, very bad.
Nay, I'm sure, Sir Peter, your lady can't be the cause of your uneasiness.
Why, has anybody told you she was dead?
Come, come, Sir Peter, you love her. Notwithstanding, your tempers don't exactly agree.
But the fault is entirely hers, Master Rowley. I am myself the sweetest-tempered man alive and hate a teasing temper, and so I tell her 100 times a day.
Indeed.
And what is very extraordinary, in all our disputes, she is always in the wrong. There. To complete my vexation, Mariah, my ward, whom I ought to have the power of a father over, is determined to turn rebel too, and absolutely refuses Joseph, the man I've long resolved on her for a husband, meaning, I suppose, to bestow herself on his profligate brother Charles.
You know, Sir Peter, I have always taken the liberty to differ with you on the subject of these two young gentlemen. I only wish you may not be deceived in your opinion of the elder. For Charles, my life on't, he will retrieve his errors.
Ah, you're wrong, Master Rowley. In their father's death, you know I acted as a kind of guardian to them both. Joseph is indeed a model for the young men of the age, but for the other, take my word for it, if he had any grain of virtue by descent, he's dissipated it with the rest of his inheritance.
I'm sorry to find you so violent against the young man. I came hither with news that will surprise you. Sir Oliver is arrived and at this moment in town.
How? You astonish me. Sir Oliver arrived? It is 16 years since we met. Mm. Does he know that I'm married?
Yes, and we'll soon wish you joy.
What? As we drink health to a friend in consumption. Oliver will laugh at me. But, Master Rowley, don't drop a word that Lady Teasle and I ever disagree.
Oh, by no means. But you must be very careful not to differ while he is in the house.
Yes, so we must, and that's impossible. Ah, Master Rowley, when an old bachelor marries a young wife, he deserves... No, the crime carries its punishment along with it.
A room in Sir Peter Teasle's house.
Lady Teasle, I'll not bear it.
Sir Peter, you may bear it or not as you please. But I ought to have my own way in everything. And what's more, I will, too.
Very well, ma'am, very well. So as a husband is to have no influence, no authority.
Authority? No, to be sure. If you wanted authority over me, you should have adopted me and not married me. I'm sure you were old enough.
Old enough? Aye, there it is. Well, Lady Teasle, though my life may be made unhappy by your temper, I'll not be ruined by your extravagance.
My extravagance? Well, I'm sure I'm not more extravagant than a woman of fashion ought to be.
Slife. To spend as much to furnish your dressing room with flowers in winter as would suffice to turn the Pantheon into a greenhouse and give a fete champêtre at Christmas.
And am I to blame, Sir Peter, because flowers are dear in cold weather? Oh, you should find fault with the climate, not with me.
Bones, madam, if you'd been born to this, I shouldn't wonder at your talking thus. But you forget what your situation was when I married you.
No, I don't. It was a very disagreeable one, or I should never have married you.
Oh, yes, madam. You were then in a somewhat humbler style, the daughter of a plain country squire. I recollect, Lady Teasle, when I saw you first sitting at your tambour in a pretty figured linen gown with a bunch of keys at your side.
Oh, yes, I remember it well. And a curious life I led. My daily occupation to inspect the dairy, make extracts from the family receipt book, and comb my Aunt Deborah's lapdog.
Ah, yes, madam, 'twas so indeed.
And then, you know, my evening amusements. To draw patterns for ruffles, to play Pope Joan with the curate, or to be stuck down to an old spinet to strum my father to sleep after a fox chase.
I'm glad you have so good a memory. Yes, madam, these were the recreations I took you from. But now you must have your coach vis-a-vis. And three-parted footman before your chair, with no recollection, I suppose, that you were content to ride double behind the butler on a docked coach horse.
No, I swear I never did that.
Yes, you did.
I did not.
You did?
I did not. I deny the butler and the coach horse.
Yes, you did, madam, and what's more, his name was Dobbin, and he was blind in one eye. This, madam, was your situation, and what have I done for you? I've made you a woman of fashion, of fortune, of rank. In short, I've made you my wife.
Well, then, and there's but one thing more you can make me to add to the obligation. That is...
My widow, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you, madam, but don't flatter yourself, for though your ill conduct may disturb my peace of mind, it shall never break my heart, I promise you. However, I'm equally obliged to you for the hint.
Oh, then why will you endeavor to make yourself so disagreeable to me and thwart me in every little elegant expense?
Slife, madam, I say, had you any of these little elegant expenses when you married me?
Lord, Sir Peter, would you have me to be out of the fashion?
Oh, fashion indeed. What had you to do with fashion before you married me?
For my part, I should think you'd like to have your wife thought a woman of taste.
Aye, there it is again, taste. Zounds, madam, you had no taste when you married me.
That's very true indeed, Sir Peter. And after having married you, I should never pretend to taste again, I allow. Oh, but now, Sir Peter, since we finished our daily jangle, I presume I may go to my engagement at Lady Sneerwell's.
Aye, a charming set of acquaintances you've made there.
Nay, Sir Peter, they're all people of rank and fortune, and remarkably tenacious of reputation.
Yes, egad, they're tenacious of reputation with a vengeance. for they don't choose anybody should have a character but themselves.
What, would you restrain the freedom of speech?
Ah, they've made you just as bad as any of the society.
Why, I believe I do bear a part with a tolerable grace.
Grace, indeed.
Uh-huh. Oh, but Sir Peter, you know you promised to come to Lady Sneerwell's, too.
Well, I'll call in just to look after my own character.
Mm-hmm. Then, indeed, you must make haste after me, or you'll be too late. So, goodbye to you.
So I've gained much by my intended expostulation. Yet with what a charming air she contradicts everything I say and how pleasantly she shows her contempt for my authority. Well, though I can't make her love me, there's a great satisfaction in quarreling with her. And I think she never appears to such advantage as when she's doing everything in her power to plague me.
From here we go into one of the famous scandal scenes from which the play takes its name. A room in Lady Sneerwell's house. Lady Sneerwell, Mrs. Candor, Crabtree, Sir Benjamin Backbite, Joseph Surface, Lady Teazle, and Maria are vividly talking.
Now I'll die. But you're so scandalous, I'll forswear your society.
What's the matter, Mrs. Candor?
They'll not allow our friend, Miss Vermilion, to be handsome.
Oh, surely she's a pretty woman.
I'm very glad you think so, ma'am.
She has charming fresh color.
Yes, when it's fresh put on.
Oh, fie. I'll swear her color is natural. I have seen it come and go.
Oh, I dare swear you have, ma'am. It goes off at night and comes again in the morning.
Oh, true, ma'am. It not only comes and goes, but what's more again, her maid can fetch and carry it.
Sir Peter Teazle. Ah, ladies, you're most obedient. Mercy on me, here's the whole set.
Oh, I'm rejoiced you're come, Sir Peter. They've been so censorious.
Oh, that must be very distressing to you, Mrs. Candor, I dare swear.
Well, I will never join in ridiculing a friend. And so I constantly tell my cousin Ogle, and you all know what pretensions she has to be critical on beauty.
Oh, to be sure. She has herself the oddest countenance that ever was seen. Tis a collection of features from all the different counties of the globe.
Oh, she has indeed. An Irish front.
Caledonian locks.
A Dutch nose.
Austrian lips.
Oh, complexion of a Spaniard.
And teeth a la Chenoise.
Mercy on my life, a person they dine with twice a week.
Go, go. You are a couple of provoking toads.
Oh, nay, but I vow you shall not carry the laugh off so. Forgive me leave to say that Mrs. Ogle...
Madam, I beg your pardon. There's no stopping these good gentlemen's tongues. But when I tell you, Mrs. Candor, that the lady they are abusing is a particular friend of mine, I hope you'll not take her part.
Well said, Sir Peter. But you are a cruel creature. Too phlegmatic yourself for a jest. And too peevish to allow wit in others.
Ah, madam, true wit is more nearly allied to good nature than your ladyship is aware of.
True, Sir Peter. I believe they are so near akin that they can never be united.
Yes, or rather, madam, suppose the man and wife, because one seldom sees them together.
Come, ladies. Come and sit down to parliament.
Your ladyship must excuse me. I am called away by particular business, but I leave my character behind me.
You better take it with you, Sir Peter. It'll be damnably mauled here.
Well, certainly, Lady Teazle, that lord of yours is a strange being. I could tell you some stories of him that would make you laugh heartily if he were not your husband.
Oh, now, pray don't mind that. Come, do let's hear them.
Maria, I see you have no satisfaction in this society.
How is it possible I should?
But can you, Maria, feel thus for others and be unkind to me alone? Is hope to be denied the tenderest passion?
Why will you distress me by renewing this subject?
Ah, Maria, you would not treat me thus and oppose your guardian, Sir Peter's, will, but that I see my profligate brother Charles is still a favored rival.
Ungenerously urged.
Nay, but Maria, do not leave me with a frown. Cancel life here, Lady Teazle. You must not. No, you shall not. For though I have the greatest regard for Lady Teazle,
Lady Teazle?
Yet were Sir Peter to suspect
what you... What is this, pray? Child, you are wanted in the next room. What is all this, pray?
Oh, the most unlucky circumstance in nature. Maria has somehow suspected the tender concern I have for your happiness and threatened to acquaint Sir Peter with her suspicions. And I was just endeavoring to reason with her when you came in.
Indeed. Do you usually reason on your knees?
Oh, she is a child. And I thought a little bombast... But, Lady Teazle, when are you going to give me your judgment on my library as you promised?
No, I begin to think it would be imprudent... I have so many of my country prejudices left that though Sir Peter's ill humor may vex me ever so, it never shall provoke me to...
The only revenge in your power. Well, I applaud your moderation.
I'll go. You are an insinuating wretch. But we... We shall be missed. Let us join the company.
But we had best not return together.
Well, don't stay, for Maria shan't come to hear any more of your reasoning, I promise you.
A room in Sir Peter Teasel's house. Rowley and Sir Oliver Surface are waiting on Sir Peter Teasel.
So my old friend is married, eh? A young wife out of the country.
But you must not rally him on the subject, Sir Oliver. It is a tender point, I assure you.
Poor Peter. But you say he has entirely given up Charles, never sees him, eh?
His prejudice against him is astonishing. I am sure greatly increased by a jealousy of him with Lady Teasel, which he has industriously been led into by a scandalous society in the neighborhood who have contributed not a little to Charles' ill name.
I know. There are a set of malicious, prattling, prudent gossips, both male and female, who murder characters to kill time. But I'm not to be prejudiced against my nephew by such, I promise you. Oh, no. Charles has done nothing.
No, here comes Sir Peter.
Yes, so he does. Mercy on me. One may read husband in his face at this distance.
Ah, Sir Oliver, my old friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Sir Peter. But what? I find you married, eh, my old boy? well, it can't be helped. And so I wish you joy with all my heart.
Thank you, Sir Oliver. Yes, I have entered into the happy state, but we'll not talk about that now.
True, Sir Peter. Old friends should not begin on grievances at first meeting. No.
Take care, Sir Oliver.
Oh, yes. Well, one of my nephews is a wild rogue, eh?
Wild, my friend. I grieve for your disappointment there. However, his brother will make you amends. Joseph is indeed what a youth should be. Everybody in the world speaks well of him.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it.
Huh?
If he salutes me with a scrap of morality in his mouth, I shall be sick directly. But before I form my judgment of either of them, I intend to make a trial of their hearts. And my friend Rowley and I have planned something for the purpose.
Yes, Sir Peter. I have below a friendly Jew whom I have brought for Sir Oliver to question relative to Charles' affairs.
Well, pray let us have him in.
Did you ring, sir?
I desire Mr. Moses to walk upstairs.
Very good, sir.
But pray, why should this Moses speak the truth?
Oh, I have convinced him that he has no chance of recovering certain sums advanced to Charles, but through the bounty of Sir Oliver, so that you may depend on his fidelity to his own interests. Here he comes. Oh, Moses, this is Sir Oliver.
Sir, I understand you have lately had great dealings with my nephew, Charles.
Oh, yes, Sir Oliver. I have done all I could for him, but he was ruined before he came to me for assistance.
That was unlucky. Yes, I suppose you have done all in your power for him, any more, honest Moses?
Yes, he knows that. This very evening I was to have brought him a gentleman from the city who does not know him and will, I believe, advance him some money.
What, one Charles has never had money from before?
Yes, a Mr. Premium of Cratchit Friars, formerly a broker.
Egad, Sir Oliver, a thought strikes me.
Hmm?
Charles, you say, does not know Mr. Premium.
Not at all, no.
Sir Oliver,
yeah?
Go with my friend Moses and represent Premium, and then I'll answer for it. You will see your nephew in all his glory.
Well, this is taking Charles rather at a disadvantage, to be sure. However, Moses, you understand Sir Peter and will be faithful.
You may depend upon me. This is near the time I was to have gone.
Well, but how must I talk? There's certainly some mode of treatment that I ought to know.
Oh, there's not much to learn. The great point, as I take it, is to be exorbitant enough in your demands.
Yes, that's a very great point.
I'll answer for it. I'll not be wanting in that. I'll ask him 8 or 10% on the loan at least.
What? If you ask him no more than that, you'll be discovered immediately.
How much, then?
Well, it depends upon the circumstances. If he appears not very anxious for the supply, you should require only 40 or 50%. But if you find him in great distress and want the money is very bad, you may ask double.
Good honest trade you're learning, Sir Oliver.
Truly, I think so, and not unprofitable. Moses shall give me further instructions as we go together.
Oh, you won't have much time, for your nephew lives hard by.
Oh, never fear. My tutor appears so able that though Charles lived on the next street, it'd be my own fault if I'm not a complete rogue before I turn the corner.
A room in Sir Peter's house.
Blood, Sir Peter, I hope you haven't been quarreling with Mariah. It's not using me well to be so ill-humored when I'm not by.
Ah, Lady Teasel, you might have the power to make me good-humored at all times.
Oh, I'm sure I wish I had, but I want you to be in a charming sweet temper at this moment. And let me have £200.
£200? What, aren't I to be in a good humor without paying for it? Ah, you shall have it. But seal me a bond for the repayment.
Oh, no, there. My note of hand will do as well.
And you shall not longer reproach me with not giving you an independent settlement. I mean shortly to surprise you. But shall we live always thus?
If you please. I'm sure I don't care how soon we leave off quarreling. Provided you alone, you were tired first.
Well, then let our future contest be who shall be most obliging.
I assure you, Sir Peter, good nature becomes you. You look now as you did before we were married, when you used to walk with me under the elms and tell me stories of what a gallant you were in your youth and chuck me under the chin.
Yes, and you were as kind and attentive
as... I was, and would always take your part when my acquaintance used to abuse you and turn you into ridicule.
Indeed?
Aye, and when my cousin Sophie has called you a stiff, peevish old bachelor, laughed at me for thinking of marrying one who might be my father, I've always defended you and said that you'd make a very good sort of a husband.
And you prophesied right, and we shall now be the happiest couple in...
And never differ again.
Never
differ again.
No, never. Though, at the same time, my dear Lady Teasel, you must watch your temper very seriously. For in all our little quarrels, my dear, if you recollect, my love, you always began first.
I beg your pardon, my dear Sir Peter. Indeed, you always gave the provocation.
Now, see, my little angel, take care. Contradicting isn't the way to keep friends.
Then don't you begin it, my love.
There, now, you're going on. You don't perceive, my life, that you're just doing the very thing which you know always makes me angry.
Well, you know, if you will be angry without any reason...
There, now, you want to quarrel again.
No, I'm sure I don't, but if you will be so peevish...
There, now, who begins first?
Why, you, to be sure. I said nothing, and there's no bearing your...
No, temper. No, madam, there's a fault in your own temper.
Aye, you're just what my cousin Sophie said you would.
Your cousin Sophie is a forward, impertinent gypsy.
You're a great big bear, I'm sure, to abuse my relations.
Well, now may all the plagues of marriage be doubled on me if I ever try to be friends with you anymore.
So much the better.
No, madam, 'tis evident you never cared a pin for me, and I was a madman to marry you.
And I'm sure I was a fool to marry you, an old dangling bachelor who was single at 50, only because he never could meet with anyone who'd have him.
Aye, madam, but you were pleased enough to listen to me. You never had such an offer before.
No? Didn't I refuse the Tibby Terrier, who everybody said would have been a better match, for his estate is just as good as yours, and he's broke his neck since we've been married.
No, I've done with you, madam. You're an unfeeling, ungrateful... But there's an end of everything. I believe you capable of everything that is bad. Yes, madam, I now believe the reports relative to you and Charles, madam.
Take care, Sir Peter. I'll not be suspected without cause, I promise you.
Very well, madam. Very well. A separate maintenance as soon as you please. Yes, madam, or a divorce. I'll make an example of myself for the benefit of all old bachelors. Let us separate, madam.
Agreed. And now, my dear Sir Peter, we're of a mind once more. We may be the happiest couple and never, never, never differ again. You know? Well, you're going to be in a passion, I see, and I shall only interrupt you. So, bye-bye.
Oh, plagues and tortures. Can't I make her angry either? Oh, I'm the most miserable fellow. But I'll not bear her presuming to keep her temper. No. She may break my heart, but she shan't keep her temper.
A room in Charles Surface's house, where Charles, Careless, and other friends are having a merry time.
For heavens, it's true. There's the great degeneracy of the age. Many of our acquaintance have taste, spirit, and politeness, but playing on it, they won't drink.
What's this all day, Charles? They give in to all the substantial luxuries of the table and abstain from nothing but wine and wit. Now then, Charles, be honest and give us your real, real favorite.
Why, I have withheld her only in compassion to you. If I toast her, you must give a round of her peers, which is impossible on earth.
Oh, then we'll find some canonized vestals or heathen goddesses that will do, I warrant.
Here then, bumpers, your rogues, bumpers. Mariah.
Mariah!
Mr. Premium and Mr. Moses.
Moses!
So honest, Moses! Walk in, pray, Mr. Premium. That's this gentleman's name, isn't it, Moses?
Yes, sir.
Sit down, Mr. Premium. Sit down, Moses.
Oh, come, Harry. The dice are in the next room. Charles, you'll join us when you finish your business with the gentleman?
I will.
Sir Charles, this is Mr. Premium, a gentleman of the strictest honor and secrecy. Mr. Premium, this is...
Sir, my friend Moses is a very honest fellow, but a little slow at expression. Mr. Premium, I am an extravagant young fellow who wants to borrow money. You, I take it, to be a prudent old fellow who has got money to lend. I'm blockhead enough to give 50% sooner than not have it. And you, I presume, are rogue enough to take 100 if you can get it.
Exceeding frank, upon my word. I see, sir, you are not a man of many compliments. However, you are mistaken in one thing. I have no money to lend, but I believe I could procure some from a friend.
Mr. Premium, these are trifles. I know money isn't to be bought without paying for it.
Well, but what security could you give? You have no land, I suppose?
Not a molehill nor a twig.
Nor any stock, I presume.
Nothing but livestock. But pray, Mr. Premium, are you acquainted with any of my connections?
Why, to say the truth, I am.
Then you must know that I have a devilish rich uncle in the East Indies, Sir Oliver Surface, from whom I have great expectations.
That you have a wealthy uncle, I have heard, but how your expectations will turn out is more, I believe, than you can tell.
Oh, no, there can be no doubt. They tell me I'm a prodigious favorite, and that he talks of leaving me everything.
Indeed. This is the first I've heard of it.
Yes, yes, it is just so. Moses knows it's true, don't you, Moses?
Oh, yes, I'll swear to it.
Now, I propose, Mr. Premium, if it's agreeable to you, a post-orbit on Sir Oliver's life. Though at the same time, the old fellow has been so liberal to me that I should be very sorry to hear that anything had happened to him.
No more than I should, I assure you. But the bond you mentioned happens to be just the worst security you could offer me.
Huh?
For I might live to 100 and never see the principal.
Oh, yes, you would. The moment Sir Oliver dies, you know, you come down on me for the money.
Then I believe I should be the most unwelcome dun you ever had in your life.
What? I suppose you're afraid that Sir Oliver is too good a life.
No, indeed I'm not, though I've heard he's as hale and healthy a man as any of his years in Christendom.
Well, there again, you're misinformed. Oh, no, no. The climate has hurt him considerably. Poor Uncle Oliver, yes, yes, he breaks a pace, I'm told. And is so much altered lately that his nearest relations wouldn't know him.
No! So much altered lately that his nearest relations would not know him. Egad, Moses.
Oh, you're glad to hear that, little Premium.
No, I'm not.
Yes, yes, you are. Yeah, you know that mends your chance.
But I'm told Sir Oliver is coming over. Some say he's actually arrived.
Oh, sure, I must know better than you whether he's come or not.
Very true, as you say. You must know better than I. Though I have it from pretty good authority, and I most...
Yes, most undoubted.
But, sir, as I understand now, you want a few hundreds immediately. Is there nothing you could dispose of?
Not much, indeed, unless you have a mind of the family pictures. I've got a room full of ancestors above, and egad, you shall have them at a bargain.
Oh, what the devil, sure. Well, you wouldn't sell your forefathers, would you?
Every man of them to the best bidder.
What, your great uncles and aunts?
I am my great grandfathers and grandmothers, too.
Oh, come, Charles, what keeps you?
I can't come yet. Little Premium here may buy all my ancestors.
Oh, burn your ancestors.
No, he may do that afterwards, if he please. Stay careless, we want you. Egad, you shall be auctioneer.
Oh, have with you, if that's the case. I can handle a hammer as well as a dice box. Going, going.
Oh, the prophet.
Come, Moses, you shall be appraiser if we want one. Yeah. Oh, God's life, Little Premium, you don't seem to like the business.
Oh, yes, I do vastly. Yes, I think it a rare joke to sell one's family by auction. Oh, the prodigal.
But to be sure, when a man wants money, where the plague should he get assistance if he can't make free with his own relations?
Never.
A picture room in Charles Surface's house.
Walk in, gentlemen, pray walk in. Here they are, the family of the Surfaces up to the conquest.
And in my opinion, a goodly collection.
Aye, these are done in the true spirit of portrait painting. All stiff and awkward as the originals, and like nothing in human nature besides.
Yes, we shall never see such figures of men again.
I hope not. But come, get your pulpit, Mr. Auctioneer. Here's an old gouty chair of my grandfather that will answer the purpose.
This will do. Charles, I haven't a hammer. And what's an auctioneer without his hammer?
Oh, gad, that's true. Well, what parchment have we here? Oh, our genealogy in full. Oh. Here, Carlos, you shall have no common bit of mahogany. Here's a family tree for you, you rogue. This shall be a hammer.
What an unnatural rogue, an ex-post facto parasite.
Here's a list of your generation, indeed. Oh, faith, Charles, this is the most convenient thing you could have found for the business. For 'twill not only serve as a hammer, but a catalogue into the bargain. Come, begin. Going.
Bravo, Carlos. Well, here's my great-uncle, Sir Richard Revlin, a marvelous good general in his day, I assure you. He served in all the Duke of Marlborough's wars and got that cut over his eye at the Battle of Malplaquet.
Bid him speak.
Well, what do you bid?
Bid him speak. Bid him speak.
Mr. Premium would have you speak.
Well, then, he shall have him for £10.
Heaven deliver me his famous Uncle Richard for £10. Very well, sir, I take him at that.
Careless, knock down Uncle Richard.
Going.
Uncle Richard, £10.
Here now is a maiden sister of his, my great aunt Deborah, and esteemed a very formidable likeness. There she is, you see, a shepherdess feeding her flock. You shall have her for £5.10. The sheep are worth the money.
Oh, poor Deborah, a woman who set such a value on herself. £5.10, she's mine.
Knock down Aunt Deborah.
Going.
Aunt Deborah and a flock of sheep, £5.10.
This now is a grandfather of my mother's, a learned judge. What do you rate him at, Moses?
Four guineas.
4 guineas? Gad's life, you don't give him the price of his wig. Mr. Premium, do let us knock his lordship down at 15.
Oh, by all means.
Done.
And there are two brothers of his, William and Walter Blunt, Esquires, both members of Parliament.
I'll take them at your own price for the honor of Parliament, sir.
Well said, little Premium. I'll knock them down at 40.
Here's a jolly fellow. I don't know what his relations were, but he was mayor of Norwich. Take him at £8.
No. 6 will do for the mayor.
Oh, come, Mickey Guineas. And I'll throw you the 2 aldermen there into the bargain.
They're mine.
Careless, knock down the mayor and the aldermen.
Gone.
Oh, but plague on it, we'll be all day retailing in this manner. Do let us deal wholesale. What say you, little Premium? Give me £300 for the rest of the family in the lump.
Aye, that'll be the best way.
Well, anything to accommodate you. They are mine. But there is one portrait which you have always passed over.
What? That ill-looking little fellow over the settee?
Yes, sir, I mean that. Though I don't think I'm so ill-looking a little fellow by any means.
What, that? Oh, that's my Uncle Oliver. It was done before he went to India.
Your Uncle Oliver? Oh, gad, Charles, then you'll never be friends. Oh, that now to me is a sterner-looking rogue as ever I saw. An unforgiving eye. And a damn disinheriting countenance. Don't you think so, little Premium?
Upon my soul, sir, I do not. I think it is as honest a looking face as any in the room, dead or alive. But I suppose Uncle Oliver goes with the rest of the lumber.
No, hang it. I'll not part with poor Noll. The old fellow's been very good to me. Gad, I'll keep his picture while I've a room to put it in.
The rogue's my nephew, after all. But, sir, I have somehow taken a fancy to that picture.
I'm sorry for it, for you'll certainly not have it. Uns, man, haven't you got enough of them?
I've forgiven everything. But, sir, I'll give you as much for that as for all the rest.
Don't tease me, Master Broker. I tell you, I'll not part with it, and there's an end of it.
Oh, like his father the dog is. Well, I've done. Yeah, you know. Here is a draft for your son.
Uh-huh. Why, 'tis for £800.
You will not let Sir Oliver go?
Zounds, no, I tell you, once more.
Then never mind the difference. We'll balance that another time. But give me your hand in the bargain. You are an honest fellow, Charles.
Oh,
I beg, sir. I beg pardon, sir, for being sorry. Come on.
Yes, this is a whimsical old fellow. But Harkey Premium, you'll prepare lodgings for these gentlemen.
Yes. I'll send for them in a day or two.
But hold. Do now send a genteel conveyance for them.
I will. For all but Oliver.
Aye, all but the little nabob.
You're fixed on that?
Peremptorily.
A dear extravagant road. Good day.
Why, this is the oddest genius of the sort I ever met with.
Again, he's the prince of brokers, I think. I wonder how the devil Moses got acquainted with so honest a fellow. Go, Careless. Say I'll join the company in a few moments.
Oh, I will.
So, this was an odd old fellow indeed. Let me see. 2/3 of these 530-odd pounds are mine by right. For heaven, I find one's ancestors are more valuable relations than I took them for. Ladies and gentlemen, your most obedient and very grateful servant.
Mm-hmm. A library in Joseph Surface's house. The walls are lined with books. In one corner of the room, slightly beyond the closet door, stands a screen hung with maps. Joseph Surface is looking through one of the windows when a servant enters.
No letter from Lady Teazle?
No, sir.
I'm surprised she has not sent if she is prevented from coming. Sir Peter certainly does not suspect me. Yet I wish I may not lose the heiress Maria through the scrape I've drawn myself into with a wife.
Sir, I believe that must be Lady Teazle.
Hold, look out of the window, see whether it is or not before you go to the door.
It is her ladyship, sir. She always leaves the chair at the milliner's in the next street.
Stay. Draw that screen before the window.
Yes, sir.
That will do. I have a difficult hand to play in this affair. Lady Teazle has lately suspected my views on Maria, but she must by no means be let into that secret, at least till I have her more in my power.
What sentiment and soliloquy now?
Lady Teazle.
Oh, have you been very impatient? Oh, Lord, I vow I couldn't come before.
Oh, madam, punctuality is a species of constancy very unfashionable in a lady of quality.
Upon my word, you ought to pity me. Do you know Sir Peter is grown so ill-natured to me of late, and so jealous of Charles, too? Oh, I'm sure I wish he would let Maria marry him. And then perhaps he'd be convinced, don't you, Mr. Surface?
Indeed, I do not. Oh, certainly I do. For then my dear Lady Teazle would also be convinced how wrong her suspicions were of my having any design on the silly girl.
Well, I'm inclined to believe you. But isn't it provoking to have the most ill-natured thing said of one, and all without any foundation, too? That's what vexes me.
Ah, madam, to be sure, that is the provoking circumstance, without foundation. For when a scandalous story is believed against one, there certainly is no comfort like the consciousness of having deserved it.
No, to be sure, then, I'd forgive their malice. But to attack me, who am really so innocent, and then Sir Peter, too, to have him so peevish and so suspicious.
But, my dear Lady Teazle, it is your own fault if you suffer it. When a husband entertains a groundless suspicion of his wife, she owes it to the honor of her sex to endeavor to outwit him.
Oh, indeed. So that if he suspects me without cause, it follows that the best way of curing his jealousy is to give him reason for it.
Undoubtedly, for your husband should never be deceived in you. And in that case, it becomes you to be frail in compliment to his discernment.
To be sure, what you say is very reasonable. And when the consciousness of my innocence...
Ah, my dear madam, there is the great mistake. Why, what makes you thoughtless in your conduct? The consciousness of your own innocence. What makes you impatient of Sir Peter's suspicions? Why, the consciousness of your own innocence.
It is very true.
Now, my dear Lady Teazle, if you would but once make a trifling faux pas, you can't conceive how cautious you would grow.
Do you think so?
Oh, I'm sure on't. And then you would find all scandal would cease at once. For, in short, your character at present is like a person in a plethora, absolutely dying from too much health.
So then I perceive your prescription is that I must sin in my own defense and part with my virtue to preserve my reputation.
Exactly so, upon my credit, ma'am.
Well, certainly this is the oddest doctrine and the newest receipt for avoiding calumny.
An infallible one, believe me. Prudence, like experience, must be paid for.
Why, if my understanding were once convinced...
Oh, certainly, madam, your understanding should be convinced. Oh, yes. Heaven forbid I should persuade you to do anything you thought wrong. No, I have too much honor to desire it.
Don't you think we may as well leave honor out of the argument?
The ill effects of your country education, I see, still remain with you.
I doubt they do, indeed. And I will fairly own to you that if I could be persuaded to do wrong, it would be by Sir Peter's ill usage, sooner than your honorable logic, after all.
Then, by this hand, which he is unworthy of, I... Sir. William, you blockhead, what do you want?
I beg your pardon, sir, but I thought you would not choose Sir Peter to come up without announcing him.
Sir Peter!
Where's the devil? I'm ruined!
Sir, I'm undone!
What will become of me? Now, Mr. Logic... Oh, mercy, sir, he's on the stairs. I'll get behind the screen.
Yes, sir.
And if I'm ever so imprudent...
Give me that book.
Yes, sir.
And leave me.
Ever improving himself. Mr. Service.
Oh, my dear Sir Peter, I beg your pardon. I have been dozing over a stupid book. You haven't been here, I believe, since I fitted up this room.
Oh, it is very neat indeed. And you can make even your screen a source of knowledge, I perceive, with maps.
Oh, yes, I find great use in that screen.
Yes, I dare say you must, certainly when you want to find anything in a hurry.
To hide anything in a hurry,
Joseph, there is a subject, my dear friend, on which I wish to unburden my mind to you. a point of the greatest moment of my peace. In short, my good friend, Lady Teazle's conduct of late has made me very unhappy.
Indeed, I am very sorry to hear it.
And what's worse, I've pretty good authority to suppose she has formed an attachment to another.
Indeed, you astonish me.
And between ourselves, I think I've discovered the person.
How? You alarm me exceedingly.
Oh, my dear friend, I knew you would sympathize with me.
Yes, believe me, Sir Peter, such a discovery would hurt me just as much as it would you.
I'm convinced of it, but have you no guess who I mean?
I haven't the most distant idea.
Then what say you to Charles?
My brother? Impossible.
Oh, my dear friend, you judge others by yourself.
Yet I can't think but Lady Teazle herself has too much principle.
Why, but what is principle against the flattery of a handsome, lively young man?
Aye, that's very true.
And then you know the difference of our ages makes it very improbable that she should have any great affection for me. And if she were to be frail and I were to make it public, why, the town would only laugh at me.
That's true, to be sure. They would laugh. No, you must never make it public.
But then again, that the nephew of my old friend Sir Oliver should be the person to attempt such a wrong.
Oh, 'tis not to be credited. There may be a man capable of such baseness, to be sure. But for my part, till you can give me more positive proofs, I cannot but doubt it. However, if it should be proved on him, he is no longer a brother of mine.
Oh, what a difference there is between you.
Yet I cannot suspect Lady Teazle's honor.
I'm sure I wish to think well of her and to remove all ground of quarrel between us. She has lately reproached me for more than once having made no settlement on her. And now we seem to differ on our ideas of expense. I have resolved that she shall have her own way and be her own mistress in that respect. And here, my friend, are the drafts of two deeds. By one, she will enjoy 800 a year, independent, while I live, and by the other, the bulk of my fortune at my death.
Oh, this conduct, Sir Peter, is indeed truly generous. I wish it may not corrupt my pupil.
And now, my dear friend, if you please, we will talk over the situation of your hopes with Maria.
Oh, pray, Sir Peter, now oblige me. I'm really too much affected by the subject we have been speaking of to bestow a thought on my own concerns. Well, sir.
Your brother, sir, is speaking to a gentleman in the street and says he knows you are within.
It's death, blockhead, I'm out for the day.
Stay, hold.
A thought has struck me. You shall be at home.
Oh, well, well, let him up.
Yes, sir.
He'll interrupt Sir Peter, however.
Now, my good friend, oblige me, I entreat you. Before Charles comes, let me conceal myself somewhere. Then do you tax him on the point we've been talking, and his answer may satisfy me at once.
Oh, fie, Sir Peter, would you have me join in so mean a trick?
Nay, you tell me you are sure he is innocent. Come, you shall not refuse me.
But
here, behind the screen will be...
But
hey, what the devil? There seems to be one listener here already. I'll swear I saw a petticoat.
This is ridiculous enough. I'll tell you, Sir Peter, though I hold a man of intrigue to be a most despicable character, it does not follow that one has to be an absolute Joseph either. Harky, 'tis a little French milliner. A silly rogue that plagues me.
Gad, she's overheard all I've been saying of my wife.
Oh, she'll never go any farther, you may depend upon it. She can't speak a word of English.
No, then, faith, let her hear it out. Here's a closet. We'll do as
well. Well, go in there.
Sly rogue.
Oh, a narrow escape indeed, and a curious situation I'm in to part man and wife in this manner.
Couldn't I steal off?
Keep close, my angel.
Joseph, take him home.
Back, my dear friend.
Be
still, my life.
Show the little man in the warm rib.
In, my dear Sir Peter. Oh, forget, I wish I had a key to the door.
Hello, brother. Joseph. Hello, brother. What has been the matter? What, have you had a Jew or a wench with you?
Neither, brother, I assure you.
But what made Sir Peter steal off? I thought he'd been with you.
He was, brother, but hearing you were coming, he did not choose to stay.
What, was the old gentleman afraid I want to borrow money from him?
No, sir. But I'm sorry to find, Charles, you have lately given that worthy man grounds for great uneasiness.
How so, pray?
To be plain with you, brother, he thinks you are endeavoring to gain Lady Teazle's affections from him.
Who? I? Oh, Lord. Oh, not I, upon my word. So the old fellow has found out that he's got a young wife, has he?
This is no subject to jest on, brother. He who can laugh...
Then, seriously, I never had the least idea of what you charge me with. Upon my honor.
Well, it will give Sir Peter great satisfaction to hear
but
this.
Brother, do you know now that you surprise me exceedingly by naming me with Lady Teazle? For i'faith, I always understood you were her favorite.
Oh, for shame, Charles. This is no jest.
Egad, I'm serious. But don't you remember one day when I called here...
Me pity, Charles.
And... found you together.
Down, sir, I insist.
And then there was another time when your
servant... I beg your pardon, but Sir Peter has overheard all we have been saying.
What?
I knew you would clear yourself, or I should not have consented.
How, Sir Peter? Where is he?
Softly, there.
Oh, for heaven, I'll have him out. Sir Peter, come forth.
No, no, no.
I say, Sir Peter, come into court.
Ah.
What, my old guardian? What, turned inquisitor and take evidence in cog? Oh, fie, oh, fie.
Give me your hand, Charles. I believe I've suspected you wrongly. What I've heard has given me great satisfaction.
Egad, then, it was lucky you didn't hear any more, wasn't it, Joseph?
You would have retorted on him?
Aye, that was a joke.
Yes, yes, I know his honor too well.
But you might as well have suspected him as me in this matter, for all that.
Sir, Lady Sneerwell is below and says she will come up.
Gentlemen, here's a person come on particular business, sir.
Well, you can see him in another room.
They must not be left together. I'll send Lady Sneerwell away and return directly. Sir Peter,
yes.
Not a word of the French millionaire?
Aye. No, not for the world. Ah, oh, Charles, if you'd associated more with your brother, one might indeed hope for your reformation. He is a man of sentiment.
Oh, sure. He is too moral by half and so apprehensive of his good name, as he called it, that I suppose he'd as soon as let a priest into his house as a wench.
Oh, come, come, you wrong him. No, no, Joseph is no rake, but he is no such saint either, in that respect. And I have a great mind to tell him.
Oh, hang him, he's a very anchorite.
You must not abuse him, he may chance to hear of it again, I promise you.
What, you won't tell him?
Egad, I will tell him. Aki, have you a mind to have a good laugh at Joseph?
Huh? I should like it of all things.
Any faith we will. He had a girl with him when I called.
What, Joseph?
Oh, you jest. A little French milliner.
Huh?
And the best of the jest is, she's in the room now.
The devil she is, where?
Behind the screen.
Odd's life, let's unveil her.
No, 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 he's coming. You shan't indeed.
Oh, egad, we'll have a peep at the little milliner.
Not for the world, Joseph will never forgive me.
I'll stand by you.
Odd's, he's here.
Lady Teazle, by all that's wonderful.
Lady Teazle, by all that's horrible.
Lady Teazle, by all that's damnable.
Sir Peter... this is one of the smartest French milliners I ever saw. Egad, you seem all to have been diverting yourselves here at hide-and-seek, and I don't see who is out of the secret. Shall I beg your ladyship to inform me? Not a word. Brother, will you be pleased to explain this matter? What, is morality dumb too? Sir Peter, though I found you in the dark, perhaps you are not so now. All mute? Well, though I can make nothing of the affair, I suppose you perfectly understand each other, so I'll leave you to yourselves. Oh, brother, I'm sorry to find you've given that worthy man grounds for so much uneasiness. Sir Peter, there's nothing in the world so noble as a man of sentiment.
Sir Peter, notwithstanding, I confess that appearances are against me. I make no doubt, but I shall explain everything to your satisfaction.
If you please, sir.
The fact is, sir, that the Lady Teazle, knowing my pretensions to your ward, Maria, I say, sir, Lady Teazle being apprehensive of the jealousy of your temper and... knowing my friendship to the family will...
A very clear account upon my word. And I dare swear the lady will vouch for every article of it.
For not one word of it, Sir Peter. There is not one syllable of truth in what this gentleman has told you.
I believe you upon my soul, madam.
Stepman, will you betray me?
Good Mr. Hypocrite, by your leave, I'll speak for myself.
Aye, let her alone, sir. You'll find she'll make out a better story than you without prompting.
Hear me, Sir Peter. I came here on no matter relating to your ward... and even ignorant of this gentleman's pretensions to her. But I came, seduced by his insidious arguments, at least to listen to his pretended passion, if not to sacrifice your honor to his baseness.
Now I believe the truth is coming indeed.
The woman's mad!
No, sir. She has recovered her senses. Sir Peter, I do not expect you to credit me, but the tenderness you express for me has penetrated so to my heart that had I left the place without the shame of this discovery, my future life should have spoken the sincerity of my gratitude. As for that smooth-tongued hypocrite who would have seduced the wife of his too credulous friend, I behold him now in a light so truly despicable that I shall never again respect myself for having listened to him.
Notwithstanding all this, Sir Peter, heaven knows that,
you are a villain. And so I leave you to your conscience.
You are too rash, Sir Peter. You shall hear me. The man who shuts out conviction by refusing
to... Oh, damn your sentiments!
The last act opens in Sir Peter Teasel's house, where Sir Benjamin Backbite and Mrs. Candor are waiting to see Lady Teasel.
Oh, dear Sir Benjamin, you've heard, I suppose.
Oh, yes, of Lady Teasel and Mr. Surface.
And Sir Peter's discovery. Mm-hmm. Well, I never was so surprised in my life. I'm sorry for all parties, indeed.
Oh, no. I really don't pity Sir Peter at all. He was so extravagantly partial to Mr. Surface.
Mr. Surface?
Yes.
Why, it was with Charles Lady Teasel was detected.
Oh, no, I tell you.
Oh, but here comes Lady Smearwell.
So, my dear Mrs. Candor, here's a sad affair of our friend Lady Teasel.
Aye, my friend. Who would have thought?
No, but everybody says that Mr. Surface...
Ah, there, you see, I told you that Mr. Surface was the man.
No, indeed, the assignation was with Charles.
With Charles? You alarm me, Mrs. Candor.
Yes, he was the lover.
Well, I'll not dispute with you, Mrs. Candor, but I hope that Sir Peter's wound will
Sir
not...
Sir Peter's wound? I didn't hear a word of their fighting.
Nor I a syllable.
Oh, no, what? No mention of the duel? Sir, says Sir Peter, you are a most ungrateful fellow.
Aye, to Charles.
No, to Mr. Surface. A most ungrateful fellow. And I insist on immediate satisfaction.
Aye, that must have been to Charles.
Oh, Gad's life, ma'am, not at all. Giving me immediate satisfaction. Then, madam, they began to fight with swords.
With pistols, nephew, pistols. I have it from undoubted authority.
Oh, Mr. Crabtree, then it is all true.
True indeed, madam. And Sir Peter is dangerously wounded.
Oh, by a thrust in second, quite through his left side.
By a bullet lodged in the thorax.
Oh, who comes here?
Ah, the physician, depend on't.
It must be the physician, and now we shall know.
Well, doctor, what hope?
How's your patient?
Now, doctor, isn't it a wound with a small sword?
A bullet lodged in the thorax.
Doctor, a wound with a small sword and a bullet in the thorax? Owners, are you mad, good people?
Then you are not the doctor.
I am, sir. I must thank you for the degree.
But really, sir, you must have heard of his accident, his wound.
Upon my word, for a person in that situation, he's the most imprudent man alive, for here he comes. Why, man, what do you out of bed with a small sword through your body and a bullet lodged in your thorax?
Why, what is all this?
Well...
We rejoice, Sir Peter, that the story of the duel was not true. And sincerely sorry for your other misfortune.
I insist on your leaving my house directly.
Oh, well, we are going. And depend on it, we'll make the best report of it we can.
Leave my house.
And tell how hardly you've been treated.
Leave my house.
And how patiently you bear it.
Fiends, vipers, and furies. Oh, that their own venom would choke them.
Yeah, they are very provoking indeed, Sir Peter.
I heard high words. What has ruffled you, sir?
Oh, what signifies asking? Do I ever pass a day without my vexations?
Well, Sir Peter, I've seen both my nephews and the manner we proposed.
Yes, a precious scuttle they are.
Yes, and Sir Oliver is convinced that your judgment was right, Sir Peter.
Yes, I find Joseph is indeed the man. Oh, he's a model for the young men of the age. But how's this, Sir Peter? You don't join us in Joseph's praise, I expected.
Sir Oliver, we live in a damned wicked world, and the fewer we praise, the better.
What? Do you say so, Sir Peter, who were never mistaken in your life?
Oh, plague on you both. I see by your sneering you've heard of the whole affair. Oh, I shall go mad among you.
Then to fret you no longer, Sir Peter, we are indeed acquainted with it all.
And does Sir Oliver know all this?
Every circumstance.
What, of the closet and the screen, eh?
Yes, and the little French milliner. Oh, egad, Sir Peter, I should like to have seen your face when the screen was thrown down.
Yes, my face when the screen was thrown down. I must never show my head again.
Without affectation, Sir Peter, you may despise the ridicule of fools. But I see Lady Teasel going towards the next room.
Perhaps my being here prevents her coming to you. Well, I'll leave Honest Rowley to mediate between you.
She looks this way. What a remarkably elegant turn of the head she has. Rowley, I'll go to her.
Certainly.
Though when it's known that we are reconciled, people will laugh at me 10 times more.
Let them laugh and retort their malice only by showing them you are happy in spite of it.
If faith, so I will. And if I'm not mistaken, we may yet be the happiest couple in the country.
Nay, Sir Peter, he who once lays aside suspicion...
Old Master Rowley, if you have any regard for me, never let me hear you utter anything like a sentiment. I've had enough of them to serve me for the rest of my life.
A library in Joseph Surface's house. Joseph mistakes his uncle, Sir Oliver Surface, for Stanley, a poor relation of the Surface family, and is trying to get him to leave the room.
Dad's life, Mr. Stanley. Why have you come back to plague me at this time?
Sir, I hear your Uncle Oliver is expected here.
Sir, it is impossible for you to stay now, so I must beg you to...
No, Sir Oliver and I must be acquainted.
Zounds,
hey,
sir,
hey,
you...
Brother, don't hurt little Premium.
So, he's been with you too, has he?
To be sure he has. Joseph, you've not been borrowing money too, have you?
Borrowing, no, but brother, you know we expect Sir Oliver here every moment.
Oh, Gad, that's true. Now mustn't find the little broker here, to be sure.
Get Mr. Stanley, insist.
Stanley, but... No, his name's Premium.
No, Sir Stanley.
No, Premium.
Well, no matter which, but he...
Aye, Stanley or Premium, tis the same thing.
Death. Here, Sir Oliver, at the door. I beg Mr. Stanley
to... Aye, and I beg Mr. Premium.
Now, gentlemen!
Out with him!
It's so violent!
My old friend, Sir Oliver, eh? What in the name of wonder are all the dutiful nephews assault their uncle at his first visit?
Oh, indeed, Sir Oliver, 'twas well we came in to rescue you.
Truly it was, for I perceive, Sir Oliver, the character of old Stanley was no protection to you.
Nor of Premium either.
Charles.
Joseph.
'Tis now complete.
Very.
Sir Peter, my friend, and Roller too. Look on that elder nephew of mine, Joseph. You know how gladly I would have regarded half my fortune as held in trust for him. Judge then my disappointment in discovering him to be destitute of truth, charity and gratitude.
Sir Oliver, I should be more surprised at this declaration if I had not myself found him to be mean, treacherous, and hypocritical.
And if the gentleman pleads not guilty to these, pray let him call me to his character.
Then I believe we need add no more. If he knows himself, he will consider it as the most perfect punishment that he has known to the world.
If they talk this way to honesty, what will they say to me by and by?
As for that prodigal, his brother, eh?
Uh-huh, now comes my turn. The family pictures will ruin me.
Yes, Sir Oliver. Uncle, will you hear? Will you honor me with a hearing?
I suppose you could undertake to justify yourself.
I trust I could.
Leave us, sir.
I will, sir. But a man who refuses to listen to one...
Moral to the last.
Well, Charles. And you could justify yourself, too, I suppose.
Not that I know of, Sir Oliver.
What? Little Premium has been let too much into the secret, I suppose.
It's true, sir. But they were family secrets and shouldn't be mentioned again, you know.
Sir Peter, do you know the rogue bargained with me for all his ancestors? Sold me judges and generals by the foot and made an answer sheep as broken china.
To be sure, Sir Oliver, I did make a little free with the family canvas, and that's the truth on it. For I don't appear to be mortified at the exposure of my follies. It's because I feel at this moment the warmest satisfaction at seeing you, my liberal benefactor.
Charles, I believe you. Give me your hand again.
Sir.
The ill-looking little fellow over the settee has made your peace.
Then, sir, my gratitude to the original is still increased.
Yet I believe, Sir Oliver, Maria is one whom Charles is still more anxious to be reconciled to.
Oh, I have heard of his attachment there, and of the young lady's pardon, if I construe right that blush.
See, Sir Oliver, there needs no persuasion now to reconcile your nephew and Maria.
That's as it should be. And again, we'll have the wedding tomorrow morning.
Thank you, dear uncle.
What, you rogue? Don't you ask the girl's consent first?
Oh, I've done that a long time, a minute ago, and she has looked yes.
For shame, Charles. I protest. Sir Peter, there's been not a word.
Well, then, the fewer the better. May your love for each other never know abatement.
And may you live as happily together as Lady Teasel and I intend to do.
You have been listening to another great play, The School for Scandal, by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. The radio adaptation was by Blevins Davis. The play was produced by Charles Warburton. The cast of characters included Sir Peter Teasel, Louis Hector, Sir Oliver Surface, Charles Webster, Sir Benjamin Backbite, Kenneth Treseda, Sir Joseph Surface, Alfred Shirley, Charles Surface, Burford Hamden, Careless William Shelley, Crabtree Harry Neville, Rowley, William Podmore, Moses Joseph Granby, Tripp, John McGovern, Sir Peter's servant, Fred Barron, Lady Teasel, Selina Royal, Lady Snarewell, Jacqueline DeWitt, Mrs. Candor, Jeanne Owen, Mariah, Lorraine Wing. The orchestra was directed by Joseph Hauntley. Next week at the same hour, another great play will be presented, The Silver King, by Henry Arthur Jones and Henry Herman. Jack Costello speaking. This has been an NBC educational feature presented by the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.